Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we've gotten our hands on something pretty special. It's a really detailed design document for a game called Whispers from Yomi.
It's fascinating stuff.
It really is. Our mission today is to just completely unpack this thing. It's this unique hybrid genre. They're calling it a strategy-driven RPS battler. And it has an incredibly complex and deterministic combat philosophy.
And that's the key right there. The whole design goal, it's stated right at the top, is for this to be a mind-reading game. They're not interested in, you know, fast reflexes or luck.
I think that's where it gets so interesting, because we all think of rock, paper, scissors as, well, the ultimate game of chance. You use it to settle a bet because it's supposed to be random.
It's 50-50.
But this design, it turns that completely on its head. The whole point is to create a deterministic, a fully readable combat system where your skill is just pattern recognition,
yeah,
anticipating the opponent.
Exactly. You win because you're a better psychologist, not because you got a lucky roll.
Yeah.
The sources are so clear about this. There is zero random number generation. None.
Which, you know, brings up the big question that kind of hangs over the whole thing. If the combat is fully deterministic, doesn't that mean the meta just becomes solvable?
And that is the beautiful trap they've set. It seems like the developers totally saw that coming, because they embed all the variability into the personality and the identity of the combat vessels themselves.
So the system is predictable.
But the player is the true variable.
I love that. And this whole psychological battlefield is set in this really compelling world. The story is about these children who should not exist, June and Dee.
Right. They've fallen into this underworld, Yomi, and
yeah,
they have to go through this ritual combat, not just to, you know, survive, but to stabilize who they even are. Their internal state, their philosophy is directly linked to the game's mechanics.
So let's set the stage a bit more. What kind of place is Yomi? It sounds heavy.
It's complex. The document calls it a liminal ritualistic space. It's where impossible timelines overlap and forgotten beings kind of just gather. And this concept of presence is what actually shapes reality there.
Okay, but here's the twist that got me. Despite all that, impossible worlds, high stakes, the tone they're going for is quiet, ritualistic, uncanny, and clean.
Isn't that a great contradiction?
Yeah. It explicitly says Yomi isn't evil, it's just still.
Mm.
That suggests this kind of, I don't know, inescapable silent judgment.
Precisely. And that quietness defines everything, even the sound design. They want minimalist percussion and chimes. The rule is absolutely no bombastic battle music.
So the rhythm of the fight isn't some epic score.
No, it's the internal click of your own brain figuring out the pattern.
Okay, with that stage set, let's meet the commanders, the children piloting these vessels. First, we have June Welmar. He's about 10 or 11, and he's called the Restraint.
And his whole existence is based on a broken law from his world line, which was gentlemen produce daughters.
So he's an anomaly. He's described as quiet, moral, and his whole thing is presence through restraint.
Which is reflected in his game mechanic, his passive. When he uses the Edvia's action to guide his vessel, the success rate gets a 5% boost. He's the subtle tactician.
Then you've got his opposite, Dee Orlan. She's younger, maybe 8 or 9, and she's the assertion.
And her world broken law was scum shouldn't produce cute heroine material. So she's basically a walking, talking rejection of her own reality stereotypes.
And she's nothing like June. She's brash, competitive.
All about pride. Her role is presence through assertion. If June advises, Dee dictates. Her passive ability lowers the cost of the order command, the big manual override.
So she's all about direct, expensive control. It fits her personality perfectly.
It really does. Then you have their rival, Jog. He's a bit older, 13 or 14, and he represents something else entirely. He's absence.
Absence. The inversion of their emotional presence.
Exactly. He comes from June's world, but he was raised as a cold military asset. And, crucially, he doesn't use the organic kipple vessel like June and Dee. He pilots a mechanical geometric thing called the frame.
The frame. So it represents discipline, the void. It's pure engineered logic.
It's the ultimate expression of that deterministic idea. The doc gives this perfect example of his setup. His frame is programmed to win through a cold, unemotional pattern.
How does that work?
Its opening move is always Aether. Now, Aether almost always ends in a draw. So right away, he forces the game into his de-draw logic branch.
Which is what for him?
His logic for a win is exploit, and his logic for a loss is oracle. So by forcing a draw, he triggers his oracle logic, which predicts the opponent's next move. And that sets up this relentless loop.
Let me see if I follow. Draw triggers Oracle, which sets him up for a win.
Right. A win triggers Exploit, which keeps the pressure on. A loss just triggers Oracle again to get back on track. It's a pure mechanical pattern, engineered absence. No emotion, no chance.
Okay, that is a perfect lead-in to the deep mechanics. So if I'm a player, and I'm looking across the battlefield at an opponent's Senshi, how do I even begin to read it?
This is what they call the readability principle, and it's kind of the genius of the whole system. Every vessel, every Senshi, is defined by four visible parts: its name, its portrait, its colors, and each part tells you a piece of its combat logic.
So you can know, just by looking at it, how it will react to a win, a loss, or a draw.
You know everything.
All right, let's break it down. Part one is the basic throw. That's tied to an element. Mud is rock, mist is paper, flame is scissors. And then there's aether. Simple enough, that just tells you its opening move.
Right, that's the foundation. The complexity really starts with part two, the race. This is taken from the Chinese zodiac, and it dictates the logic routine used on a win. This is all about how the vessel presses its advantage.
So you're looking at your opponent and asking, okay, how does this thing like to win?
Exactly. And the examples are great. Take the tiger. Its win logic is exploit height. It wants to beat the opponent's last throw. It's aggressive.
Hook in the momentum.
And its passive, called feast, rewards that. It heals for 5 health. They call it Numa or PNM every time it wins with exploit height.
A predator built to capitalize on victory makes perfect sense. But then you have something like the rat, which seems like the total opposite.
The rat's logic is random. Now, you might think that breaks the no RNG rule, but it doesn't. You know the logic is random, so its moves are unpredictable. But the system isn't random.
You know that chaos is coming.
You know chaos is its strategy, and its passive is so cool. It's called adaptive. It reduces damage by 5 on a random loss, but you gain 5 action points and tab on a random win.
So if I'm using a rat, my whole strategy is built around this. Manage chaos. I know it's going to lose sometimes, but I've engineered it to soften that blow while speeding up my resource game.
You're not trying to predict the rat's throw. You're trying to stop the rat from getting into a situation where its randomness pays off for it.
Okay, that brings us to the next layer, part three, the class. This comes from the Western Zodiac, and this is what determines the logic on a LOS. This feels revolutionary to me.
This is the core philosophical choice you make when you build your team. You're designing for failure. You're actively deciding how your Senshi is going to react when it gets beaten.
It totally shifts your mindset from just offense to, like, calculated risk.
And we have two perfect examples here. Take the Aries Lance class. When it loses, its logic is advance. It just cycles through rock, paper, scissors.
Okay, a predictable cycle.
But its passive, Vanguard, adds 5 extra damage on its first throw of the whole fight. So if you pick Aries, you're accepting that it might get stuck in a predictable loop later, but you're building it to hit really hard right out of the gate.
It's like a sacrificial opening move.
Exactly. Now contrast that with the Pisces sensor. If it loses, it defaults to Oracle logic. It tries to predict the next move. And its passive propitiation reduces all damage it takes from a loss by 5.
That's a pure tank.
A pure defensive unit. Its main skill isn't winning, it's surviving. It's designed to soak up damage when its own logic fails. You can just see how Aries and Pisces demand completely different play styles.
It's incredible. Okay, finally, part four, the aspect. This connects the commander's emotional state, their soul or nature, to the logic used on a D-draw.
And this is where the story and the mechanics just merge completely. Say you have an Senshi with a lusty or sensuous aspect. If it gets a draw, its next move is automatically based on X-White logic. It gets aggressive, it wants a decisive win, it hates parity.
Whereas a timid or nervous one uses faint logic on a draw.
Right. He would immediately tries to lose to the opponent's last throw. It's basically trying to disengage, to take a controlled loss and get out of the confrontation.
Wow. So if you saw, let's say, a Rat Aries, the lusty aspect, you would know instantly before a single move that you're facing a chaotic, hard-hitting risk taker that gets aggressive if it gets stuck.
That's a huge amount of intel. And the entire system, all these combinations, are built from just 12 core logic routines.
Okay, let's try to group those instead of just listing them all.
Good idea. You can think of them as having different functions. First, you have the foundational routines. They're direct reactions to the last turn. So you have copy, which mirrors the opponent.
Exploit, which beats them. And feint, which loses to them.
And stubborn, which just repeats its own last move. Those are the reactive basics.
Then you have the more rigid ones.
Yeah.
The cyclic and absolute routines.
Yeah. So advance and reverse are the cycles, RPS and SPR. And the absolutes are blunt, sharp, and flat, which are just always rock, always scissors, always paper.
With those, you're not predicting the logic. You're predicting the specific throw it's going to land on.
Right. And then you have the special ones. We've mentioned random. There's also instruct, which is a sequence you, the player, define beforehand. So that's a pure memory game.
And the big one, oracle. The prediction logic.
The prediction logic. That's the god tier one, usually for tough enemies. That's the whole dictionary. Those 12 routines are everything.
So how does this all play out in a fight? It's 3-on-3. Each Incenti has 100 pneuma, or health. A win does 25 damage. A draw does 10 to both. Simple enough.
But the real tactical depth comes from the hold action. You can just choose to do nothing.
And you take 10 damage to yourself, but, and this is the key part, it forces your vessel to use its all-ass logic.
Exactly. So sometimes the best move isn't to win or draw. It's to take a small, calculated hit to yourself just to trigger a really useful loss passive, like that Pisces damage reduction.
Or to force your Ares into its predictable advanced cycle when you know what's coming. That adds this layer of deliberate sacrifice.
It does. And the turn flow is a clean 5-step loop that keeps it all organized. Resolve the RPS outcome, apply the win-loss-draw logic, execute the next throw, adjust the meters, and then the optional commander inputs.
And that's where June and Dee's personalities really come into play. It all depends on that pip prettier, the pneuma tension.
Resource management is everything. You gain pip tier from winning, from taking damage, but you have to spend it to override your vessel's built-in programming.
So June's specialty is advise. Costs a reasonable 15 pita, and it suggests the next best move with 70% accuracy. It fits his restraint personality perfectly. He's a guide, not a dictator.
And then there's D's order. It's a massive 40 pita, huge resource dump, but it lets you manually command the next action with 100% certainty. Her assertion demands absolute control, but that control is very expensive.
So you constantly have this choice. Do I go with Joan's efficient advice and accept a 30% risk? Or do I burn my resources for D's absolute guarantee? It's a perfect reflection of their worldviews.
It is. And you can see where they're pulling their influences from. The team building feels like Pokemon, you know, covering weaknesses. The deep customization with passives and logic feels like Paper Mario's badge system.
And the whole mind game aspect, the constant anticipation, is pure fighting game Yomi theory.
Right. And the game is built to teach you this way of thinking. You don't just jump in. Stage one, you just watch NPC matches. You learn to read the four parts of an Incenti and recognize the logic routine in action.
The game literally forces you to become a pattern reader before it even lets you play.
You only get your first vessel in stage two. The really complex stuff, the commander actions, the oracle enemies, that's all gradually rolled out later.
So by the time you reach stage six, the ending of the game depends entirely on how well you've learned these systems. The final outcome is determined by your choice of commander and how you've built the identities of your vessels.
So what's the big takeaway from all this? I think it's that Whispers from Yomi takes rock, paper, scissors, something we see as pure chance, and turns it into this deep psychological strategy game. It does that by making every single variable transparent and programmable.
It really weaponizes the idea of failure. The goal is to train you, the listener, to be this perfect pattern reader. You're not just playing to your strengths, your win logic. You're building entire strategies around your predictable weaknesses, your loss logic.
It's a beautiful thought experiment disguised as a game, isn't it? Can you build a machine that's designed to fail in a predictable way and still pilot that machine to victory?
And in the end, it links identity zodiac signs, emotions, the broken laws of their home world, directly to how these things perform in a fight. Which brings me back to Jog and his mechanical frame. It represents absence, and it wins with cold, engineered logic. Jonah D used the organic emotional kibble. He uses pure discipline. It really makes you wonder, in a world where your identity is your combat style, does disciplined, engineered absence always beat emotional reactive presence? That's the core conflict they're fighting out in Yomi.